This podcast is not meant to be professional advice of any kind. It is meant to be informative and entertaining. If you make any changes to your life, see the appropriate professional before you do so. What kind of super ager are you? Go to ageist.com/quiz. Take the super ager quiz, and we'll send you directed, personalized information to help you super age the best that you can. Welcome to Super Age. My name's David Stewart. I am the founder of Ageist and your host on the Super Age show. We talk about how to live healthier, how to live longer, and how to be happier. And who doesn't want that? Today's show is brought to you by Inside Tracker, the dashboard to your inner health. Go to insidetracker.com/ageist. Save 20% on all their products. Today's show is also brought to you by Element. L-M-N-T. My favorite electrolyte mix. It's what I put in my water in the morning, and it's what I put in my water at the gym. Go to drinkelement.com/ageist and receive a free 8-serving sample pack with any purchase. Today's show is also brought to you by Timeline Nutrition with their breakthrough product, MitoPure, the first clinically tested urolithin A supplement, which is showing tremendous results for mitochondrial health. Go to timelinenutrition.com/ageist, use the code ageist at checkout, and save 10% off your first order of MitoPure. Welcome to episode 178 of the Super Age Podcast. This will be dropping on April the 3rd, 2024. Great to have you with us today. As I'm recording this, I'm in the great city of New York, where it's 45 and cloudy, and there is a rumor that later this week it's going to snow. So, I don't know. That'll be interesting. I mean, Utah, snow this time of year. Okay, that makes sense. New York, all right, that'll be interesting. This week on the show, we're going to be talking about something called a DEXA scan. And I've invited my friend Nick Holt on to help discuss this. DEXA scans are something that I really think everyone should be doing. And we're going to dive into exactly what you get, how they work. There are different flavors of these things, but they sort of all work on the same technology. There's sort of the ones that you get in the hospital, and they're really focused in on bone density, which is great. You need to know bone density. But there's a lot of these other sort of independent places out there. The one I took, I think it's called DEXA Body, where you get all sorts of other information that, in my mind, is equally important, talking about muscle mass, what's your metabolic rate, and being able to compare those year to year, because we don't want to be losing muscle mass. That's right up there with losing bone density. We don't want to be losing that either, is really useful. I just want to sort of bring this to all you guys, what these DEXA things are. I get one. I was a little remiss. The last one I had was 2 years ago. I like to get them every year. I think that's sort of a good rhythm to it. I may get one in 6 months from now because I'm once again endlessly rehabbing my left knee. And, you know, that'll be a way to sort of mark how successful that's been. We're going to get with Nick in a few minutes. I just want to touch on a couple of other things here. Having been here in, as I mentioned, the great city of New York for, I don't know, I've been here about 10 days now, and I go back to Utah in another 10 days. One of the things that strikes me about New York is I have spent, I don't know, probably 45 years or so living in basically big cities. I mean, there's a little carve out there. I did like, you know, 3 years in the mountains of Utah. But otherwise, it's been pretty much big urban spaces. I'm super comfortable in New York. And you know, mind you, I at one point lived here for about 20 years straight. So I sort of get the vibe. There's a certain sort of social contract that comes from being in an urban space. You really can't learn from a guidebook. Like you just sort of have to be in a dense urban environment to be just sort of comfortable with, like, where do you look? How do you deal with people on the sidewalk? What's your interaction with people in stores? Things like this are really quite different than if you live in a rural environment and maybe you're not used to having this many people around and it's a little bit different of a thing. I think it's something, you know, somebody was asking me how I feel about being back in New York, and I'm totally comfortable here. But I'm also, you know, I was just recently in Hong Kong, which is another, it's sort of like New York light, if you can believe it. It's just a little less high key than New York. And I'm like super comfortable, really easy. And as I am in, you know, a lot of other places that are, you know, Tokyo, London, any of these sort of places, it's really a similar social contract that you have out in the street, how you deal with people. And I think that this is just something that really throws people if you're not used to it. And I mean, I totally get it. I recall distinctly coming to New York my first time. I think I was about 17. And I remember coming out of the subway in some sort of god-awful polyester thing I was wearing and looking up. I think we came out. I want to say, like, I remember the first thing I did is I looked up and I saw the Empire State Building all lit up and all these people moving in a way that just seemed just random to me. Like, how do you even get on the sidewalk and get anywhere? I was like a farm kid. I just didn't really know. And it took me a little while. And you know, so now I've sort of got the hang of it. And I love big cities. I especially love New York. I think it's not for everybody. I get that. You know, some people like a smaller city or some people don't like cities at all. But for me, New York it's the big daddy. It's where you don't really come here. I mean, I guess some people come here for the quality of life. I don't know. You come here to get stuff done. And I like that. And I also like being able to not feel trapped. Like I can go back to Utah for a few weeks and do that. And that'll be better. Where am I going with this? I don't know. I just had that memory of like farm kid with his bowl haircut coming out of the subway at age 17. I think it was raining that night too. And I don't know, all the adventures. The people we stayed with was a guy on my dorm floors, Eddie Rusnik. Eddie, if you're listening out there, I remember this. We stayed with his sister who lived with her boyfriend, and his sister was older. She was a school teacher, and her boyfriend was a doctor, much older, like in his 40s. He lived, I think it was like in the 60s on the east side, and it was one of these sunken living rooms. It was just so, I mean, this was like 1977, 78, you know, the shag carpet, all that. He had a key to the Playboy Club. And so me and my hayseed buddy, Eddie Rusnik, in our like polyester leisure suits, went to the Playboy Club, I think on 57th Street, agog, like had no idea what was going on. Anyway, New York in the late 70s was very different than it is now, and it was not better. Let me just tell you that. People are like, oh, wow, it must have been great back then, you know, CBGBs and the Mud Club and all that. Yeah, yeah, but it was super dangerous. You know, people think it's dangerous here now. No, no, it's very safe here now. Anyway, a little down memory lane. We're going to get with DEXA scans and my buddy Nick Holt after a quick word from our sponsor. Did you know that just pounding water all day is not going to keep you hydrated? You need the right mix of electrolytes in that water to help that water be absorbed properly and also to help your body function well with the right electrolytes. Element, LMNT, contains sodium, potassium, and magnesium, which are critical for helping our brains and our bodies function. One of the unfortunate facts is as we get older, it's harder to drink water, essentially because our thirst response is diminished. So we need to put extra emphasis on drinking water, staying hydrated with the right electrolytes. Of course, if you are pre-hypertensive or have hypertension, check with your doctor before having anything with sodium in it. For the rest of us, though, Element is a great solution. Go to drinkelement.com. That's drinkelement.com/ageist. Get a free 8-serving sample pack with your first purchase. One supplement that I take every day is MitoPure from Timeline Nutrition. It contains urolithin A. There's a tremendous amount of science out there about urolithin A, and it's all very positive. Urolithin A helps us with something called mitophagy, which is cleaning out our older, not so functional mitochondria. And at 65, I've built up some dysfunctional mitochondria, cleans those out, replaces them with new, better functioning mitochondria. What it does is it helps us with all the energy production in our bodies. Our brains, our immune systems, our muscles, all of those include mitochondria. They're the energy powerhouse, and we want to have the best mitochondria we can. This is why I take MitoPure every day, why members of my scientific board take it, why their families take it. It's a great product. If you go to timelinenutrition.com/ageist, use the code ageist at checkout, and you'll save 10% on your first purchase. Stay tuned after my conversation with Nick Holt about DEXA and DEXA scans and all that. We're going to do Just Try This, that little tidbit that every week helps you live a little healthier, a little happier, and maybe a little longer. Who knows? Let's get on with DEXA scans and Nick Holt. We're going to give him a call right now. Hey, Nick, good to see you. Where does this podcast find you today?
I'm in Costa Rica.
Good for you, man. Living the life. I love that. Tell us a little bit about what you do and why you're an enthusiast of people getting DEXA scans.
Yeah. So I'm a health coach. I'm a personal trainer. I mostly help men over 40 move, look, and feel better. You know, I'm a big fan of measuring things. I think having some objective metrics is really important. And a DEXA scan is sort of the gold standard for measuring not only body fat, but bone density, metabolic health. It's a really neat tool that I don't think was always accessible price-wise, but now it's come down and it can be pretty accessible for most people. It's a tool that I use with all my coaching clients because it really is the gold standard for a lot of this body composition stuff that I look at. It's really important that we'll get into.
I've had them twice. I had one 2 years ago and I had one a couple of weeks ago. And so in the course of the conversation here, I'm just going to tell you all of my details here, which are, they are where they are. What exactly is a DEXA scan? I know I just sort of laid on this flat thing and there was this scanner went over me for like 3 minutes. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, the simplest way to put it is it's basically it's an X-ray. So it's technically, it's a dual energy, if you want to get technical, dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. So it's basically just measuring your bone density. And then it's also giving you your body fat percentage and the amount of muscle mass, which then you can actually, which is really interesting, which will historically been used for bone density. So it's giving you a snapshot in terms of what's going on with the density of your bone, which is really important.
It's a form of X-ray. Is there a lot of radiation involved in these?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I get that a lot. I think that there is not. So technically, there is a very small amount. I was just talking to a friend who was talking to a PhD who works at the University of North Carolina, Asheville, and he was sharing that it's like 1/10 of the amount of radiation that you would get in a normal oral examination at your dentist. I think it's something like 0.003 millisieverts, I think is the actual technical way that they break it down. A chest X-ray, you know, in comparison is 0.1. So it's a very small amount of radiation that isn't to be too concerning. I wouldn't get it every month, but we're also exposed to radiation, you know, through traveling in planes and living at high altitude. So it's not nothing, but it's definitely not something to be concerned about.
And what's the frequency that you're, I waited 2 years, but I should probably do it like every year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that depends on where you're coming from, what your goals are. So a lot of the guys that I'm working with, you know, we're on sort of a 6 to 12 month cadence with the test. You know, I think it's a really good idea to have it as sort of like a baseline test at first. And then, you know, chart out sort of a goal 6 to 12 months later to sort of try to hit either body composition. So losing body fat or building muscle mass, or, you know, a lot of people use it for some older female clients who have had some osteoporosis. And that's a really good way to check to see if you're moving in the right direction. So I would say 6 months on the short side, certainly it'd be 12 to 24 months if you're tracking something and trying to hit a specific goal.
So the one that I got was, and I don't have any affiliation with these people, it's called DEXA Body. It was $75. What I've heard, I've never gotten one done in a hospital. The hospitals, it's the same technology, but they're really singularly focused on the osteopenia, osteoporosis stuff, like bone density, pelvis, lower back, things like that.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that is a very specific goal. And they're actually just usually looking at the pelvis and the lumbar spine, which are, you know, very important if you're older and you have a history of falling or if you fractured a bone before. That's really important information to have. These companies, yeah, I think there's a bunch that are now going direct to consumer. So DEXA Fit, Body Spec, there's a bunch, and I'm not affiliated with any of them. They're all going to be in that $70 to $100 range. And again, the neat part is they actually give you body fat percent. It's kind of the gold standard. And they give you muscle mass and your metabolic rate, which is really important. So that's the big distinction is, like, I think in the hospital setting is really specific looking at the pelvis for fractures, which is the stuff that you got, and the stuff that I get and the work with people is more for a more comprehensive look at body composition.
Righto. So they sent me this, I don't know, it's about an 8-page report. They didn't send it to me. They give it to you right away. It's super cool. I was there with my wife, and as my wife's getting scanned, you see her skeleton come up on the screen, you know, like the Halloween sort of skeleton thing. Like, you just see the whole thing come. And then the technician just hits a button and it spits out this huge report. And so the one that I have in my hand here, it's a comparative report, which is kind of interesting. So they'll show you, you know, where you were and where you're at. So I had my last scan in 2022,
and I weighed 170.6 pounds. This time I weigh 173 pounds. So I'm up 2.4. So my total body fat went from 12.3% to 14.1%. So I'm more fat now, which I attribute to my knee not working all that well. And I can't really, or I haven't been able to the last 6 months work out the way I used to, but I'm in the 61 to 70 year old group, and the average is 30, and the 10th percentile is 23.5. So I guess I'm okay.
Yeah. I mean, I would reframe it that you're less lean, right? I mean, you're in a very healthy range, and I think it's an important distinction to make between like what's healthy and what's normal, because it's certainly looking around the general, you're going to be, you know, in the top probably 2% for your age bracket. And what was the top 10%?
23.5. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm in the top 10% for a 16 to 20 year old male. It's the only thing about me that's other than my emotional fitness.
I would say you probably got some solid push-up game and pull-up game that probably compete with those guys. I mean, yeah, like just for comparison, I'm 44. The last one I got, I was about 14% body fat at 185 pounds. And so for me, I would still be in kind of that top 10%. I think there's, you know, from a health perspective, you certainly want to be under, I would say for a male, for sure 20, probably closer to 16. And for a woman, probably, you know, 25% or below. And we can talk through why that's important. But yeah, a lot of it is just kind of a proxy for metabolic health. You're a little less lean, but I think you're well in that healthy range for sure.
I got a good gym game. What can I say? I want to stay on this topic of fat. Because essentially, I'm not a doctor, I'm a scientist, but my understanding is there are basically two groupings of fat, of white fat. There's brown fat, which is a tiny little thing, but we're going to just talk about white fat. There's subcutaneous. So that's like the fat that's under your skin that most people register as like, I'm fat or I'm not fat. There's another kind of fat called visceral fat. And visceral fat is inside your trunk around your organs. And they're quite different. You want to give us some thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. I think you nailed it. I think that's a really important distinction. So visceral fat, generally around the abdominal, even if you don't even get a body fat test, a lot of times you can just take a waist circumference measurement at your belly button. And that can actually, there's a couple calculations online that give you sort of a proxy for your visceral fat. And that's the stuff that's in and around your organs. And that's really inflammatory. And that's really problematic. The subcutaneous fat is the stuff that's kind of in between muscle. It's the jiggly stuff that's soft, that isn't maybe as sightly or doesn't look as nice, but that's pretty innocuous. I think the big idea here is that we all have a personal fat threshold. And once we exceed that personal fat threshold, we start to store it in that visceral fat storage. So that can be problematic. So it really depends on your genetics. That's why some people might appear to be skinny, but they might have a lot of visceral fat, and other people can maybe appear a little bit fatter, but it's mostly subcutaneous, so it's not as harmful. So that's really, to me, one of the most powerful elements of the DEXA is that it gives you that visceral to subcutaneous breakdown, which is, again, really important because that visceral fat. I think the most the clear example, if you're seeing one of those like tight as a drum bellies on men, and it looks like they have, you know, like generally a beer belly kind of thing, but that is all the fat in between organs and tissues, and that's really, really problematic. So that's the stuff you want to avoid. Yeah,
highly inflammatory, and I think it's an interesting thing. You'll see people who, you know, are genetically predisposed. So oftentimes Asian folks. So very low subcutaneous fat, but they may be storing all this excess energy and fat around their organs. And I'm going to tell you, if my visceral fat has gone from 1.2 pounds to 1.56 pounds. I'm going to out my wife here. So my wife has this idea that she's like this small fat person. Her visceral fat is 0.2. She basically doesn't have any, doesn't exist. So I have 1.56 pounds of fat around my organs, good or bad?
Still fine. I mean, I don't know what there's probably some cutoff where they put you in a certain range. I would presume that on that readout, you're still in the ideal range, correct?
Yes. There's something called an Android to gynoid ratio, assess potential risks. So the ideal AG ratio is less than one. Mine is 1.25. So I guess I got to get.
Yeah, there's probably something there. So that just refers to kind of, and again, this is a genetic thing, where you store your fat. So some people are, you know, the typical apple versus pear shape. So apple being more of that abdominal, and that's when they say the android, that's the abdominal fat, versus the gynoid would be more of like the pear shaped, which you hold it more in the hips and the butt. Kind of a generalization would be across genders, but females tend to have more of the gynoid and males tend to have more of the abdominal. But yeah, you want that ratio. Again, that's tied to that's the visceral fat stuff. So you just want that ratio to be under one, ideally probably somewhere around 0.6 to 0.8. That's actually what my readout says, is under one and ideally 0.6 to 0.8. So that's probably a North Star people could shoot for.
And then I love the granularity of these things.
I could nerd out for hours on this stuff. I know this is not for everybody, but I think it's fascinating.
So one of the things, like, you can tell individual limbs, so left leg, right leg, arms, stuff like that. And so the main thing that stood out on mine here is that my change in my lean tissue, my left leg essentially shrank 1.6 pounds of muscle. That's the leg I've been having the problems with. And the right one was about the same. So you can sort of track these things. Back 2 years ago, the muscle mass was basically even. My left leg and my right leg were essentially the same, and now my left leg is 1.6 pounds less. Maybe it's just interesting to me. I don't know. Are there other people interested in this, Nick?
I would say about 50% of the guys I work with are, you know, tend to be sort of type A, kind of really analytical, you know, either like a finance or engineer type guy, and they love it. It's like, you know, it's like, wow, we can measure my right bicep versus my left bicep. And, you know, I'm a huge tennis player, and, you know, you look at like Rafa Nadal and his left bicep, he's a lefty, you know, it's like, I can't imagine what his DEXA would be, but it's gotta be at least like 2 inches bigger than his right bicep. You know, I mean, he's been using that thing as a weapon for 35 years. So like, you know, there's some kind of nerdy performance stuff you can get into, but I do think it's important, especially like, okay, you've had an injury, you've had a knee injury. This is a really powerful tool to say, is my training doing what it's designed to do? How much muscle mass have I lost? Because there's no doubt when you have a knee injury, like your body, you know, you're going to lose some muscle mass there in that quad, especially the hamstring, the glute, which are the major, you know, biggest muscles in the body. So I think it's a powerful tool to just see how your training's going and if you're on the right track or if you need to change or modify anything, which gets into the muscle mass conversation too, which is, you know, just as important for metabolic health too, in addition to performance.
Let's stay with that for a second. So this is measuring mass, like how much muscle you have. What is the correlation between that and like what we're really interested in here? I don't really care what my leg looks like that much. I mean, I do a little bit, but really what I'm talking about is function, and function is power. So how much power can I put out of this thing when I call upon it? What's the relationship between that and muscle size?
Yeah, there's a pretty direct correlation. I mean, you look at the strongest athletes, you know, the people who can produce the most force, and these are large humans, right? So you do need the more generally, like the more muscle mass, the more muscle fibers you have, the more force production you're going to be able to produce. So you're going to be a better skier. I'm going to be able to jump higher or move quicker. There's also there's also a fascinating component of muscle sort of coordination and that sort of neuromuscular connection, which the same amount of muscle tissue, but if you have a better sort of patterning between the brain and your motor neurons, then you can produce more force without actually getting bigger or larger. So, you know, another one of my sports is surfing, and that's one of those sports where you want to be very specific in terms of like the strength per pound. So you're not, so you're really trying to maximize that, that performance, that function of muscle mass, which is, you know, there's certain training modalities and techniques you can use to sort of dial that neuromuscular. Most people that I talk to and work with are under muscled, right? It's generally, you know, not only from a performance perspective, but, you know, metabolic health, like muscle is just very protective. We know, I mean, the research is so clear that the more muscle you have as you get into older age, like the, you know, the longer you live. And so I think that's very, very clear. And we can talk about those components of why that is, but I think that is, does tend to be the case that you want to hold on to muscle mass for as long as you want, for as long as you can. Yeah.
We're both sporty guys, but there's a lot of other value here to this besides athletics, which comes to just like getting up off the floor, taking out the trash. You know, you got your kid running across the floor and you want to grab him. You need to exert a certain amount of muscle and power to go there to get to that kid before he does something dumb. So there's that. It's really functional. I mean, I know for myself, when I used to surf a lot, I had a repetitive motion injury in my left elbow and I couldn't open doors. Like I couldn't put my suitcase up in the airplane and I felt really vulnerable. Like I just don't, there's something about having physical strength. I don't think always. I think there are a lot of like emotionally vulnerable, strong people out there. But for myself, I feel emotionally stronger when I'm physically stronger. I feel less vulnerable, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think no doubt you are, you know, I think, yeah, to me, regardless of if, even if you never want to play any sports, I just think the functionality of day-to-day living, I think the more muscle mass you have, just the, it's almost like a, you know, the less risk you have. I mean, the world is, it's pretty chaotic, right? I mean, and so I think you have muscle mass that kind of is very protective. It gives you an advantage, no doubt.
Let's also talk about one of the other things about having muscle is that it acts as a glucose sink. So the more muscle you got, essentially, if you get a, you know, a glucose load in your blood, so you've like eaten something, maybe you ate something dumb. You ate that Twinkie. You shouldn't have done it. Okay. But if you've got a lot of muscle, how does that impact the glucose load?
Yeah. I mean, it's really simple. It's just, you're just more insulin sensitive, which is a good thing. So you'll uptake that sugar. I mean, we're simplifying things a little bit, but essentially, just like you said, you have a bigger, I love that analogy of a sink. So you can consume a higher carbohydrate meal. You can get away with a looser diet and not have that sort of those calories spill over into fat tissue. And so where you store carbohydrates is in muscle. It's in your liver, and then it's also in muscle. So when you have, that's called glycogen. So the more sort of room you have, the more glycogen you have in your muscle mass, when you work out, you're depleting that. And so that sugar is going to be replenished into those cells. So, you know, you take two people, same exact body weight, but someone is, you know, 12% body fat and with some muscle mass and someone else is 30% body fat. That same cupcake or cookie or piece of bread is going to fundamentally be completely different in those two systems, right? For the leaner person with muscle, it's a nothing burger. It's not going to do much. For the person who's already glycogen full, they have no room for it, that might spill over into that visceral fat that we talked about. So, you know, that's really, I think, the big one with muscle mass is just from a metabolic perspective, you're just so much more robust. Regardless of the performance, the sports that I love and that you love, it's just from a health perspective, you just have a lot more buffer. Let's be honest, like the nutrition environment that we live in is very difficult to navigate. And so to me, having muscle mass, you're giving yourself just a little bit of an edge there.
So let's go. One of the other great calculations in this thing is the RMR, resting metabolic rate. So I'm reading this thing, and basically what it says is, if I were to lay motionless, which I never do, I think I'm active when I sleep. If I were to stay absolutely still for 24 hours, I would consume 1,748 calories per day. How is this useful to me?
Yeah, I think it can be useful. I think, I mean, let's back up a second. So essentially, that's what's keeping you alive, right? So that's what's keeping the lights on. There's energy in and there's energy out. So there's energy that you burn and then there's energy that you consume through food. And so that's basically giving you your sort of base of what's keeping you alive, your metabolic rate. And then on top of that, you have something called NEAT, which is non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And that's kind of like, you know, light activity, walking around the house, gardening, fidgeting. And then you obviously have exercise. And those components together give you your overall sort of calorie burn, calorie output. And so it gives you a helpful starting point. I think, to me, you don't necessarily need a DEXA to get that. You might get a little bit more precision. Most people can, based on body weight and a general range of body fat, can back into a resting metabolic rate. And then it becomes important because if, you know, for a lot of the clients that I work with, we're trying to lose body fat. And so there's a specific, you know, formula where we have to be, you know, at a calorie deficit. So we need to be basically consuming less than we're burning. And so that's where that number you can get a little bit more precise if you have a specific RMR. But I think it's important to note that, you know, a lot of these wearables, I have a Garmin, you know, the Apple Watch, they're going to give you an approximation. They're also going to give you an approximation of the amount of calories you burn, which is not very accurate, right? It's been shown, I think, up to 20, you might even know better than I, 20, 30, 50% inaccuracies with some of these calorie estimations as far as, you know, how many calories you're burning working out. So all that's to say, I think it's a helpful starting point, but I don't think it's necessary. It's nice to have, but it essentially gives you your metabolic rate of what's keeping you alive. That's the short answer. Yeah.
Off topic question. Something that really puzzles me, losing body fat while gaining muscle and you're not taking steroids. What, how did that happen?
Yeah, not easily, I think is the short answer. It can be done. There's that fascinating book, Breath, I think James Nestor a few years ago. A lot of the body fat that you lose is actually through exhalation. So you're losing it through breathing.
Carbon dioxide.
And so essentially what's happening, that's kind of like the Goldilocks of a lot of the guys that I'm working with are trying to not necessarily lose or gain weight. They're just trying to change their body composition. And so generally you have to stay in right at sort of a calorie sort of balance. And then you have to do strength training and you have to eat, you know, a moderate to high protein diet. And so you can do it, it's possible, but I always encourage people to either choose one or the other and choose more, okay, if you want to lose fat, let's go 2 to 3 months and be in sort of, you know, a calorie deficit and then maybe put on muscle after that. And it's just a lot easier because you have one goal and you know, it's a lot easier to execute on that. But it is possible to lose fat and build and gain muscle. It's not easy though. And a lot of people try and fail because you have to be very, very precise. You almost have to like weigh your food. And to me, I don't know. I don't want to live my life weighing every morsel of food personally.
Yeah. I think, you know, bodybuilders who are sort of the expert on this, there's like three phases. There's the build phase, there's the cut phase, and then there's the recovery from the cut phase. And they do exactly that. They don't do both at the same time.
And I think a point there is like a lot of those people that you see who look shredded or really lean, if you look at their blood work, it is an absolute mess. They're not healthy. I had a friend who did a competition and testosterone, thyroid, all his inflammatory were way down, inflammatory markers way up, like. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's kind of a distorted reality that we have this sort of, you know, this beauty image of what it means to be kind of lean, that doesn't mean that it's healthy, right? I think a lot of times, health is really about what's going on under the hood. And the DEXA scan is a really helpful tool to learn some of that stuff.
Let's move to bone, which is what a lot of people, you know, their doctor is like, okay, you're 60, you're 65, you need to get a DEXA. And the singular measurement they're going to get is that pelvis lumbar spine density. And so let's see, my bone density combined score compares me to a 30-year-old adult of my, all right, I'm not 30. So my BMBT score is minus 0.5. Let's see, what does that mean? That means I'm greater than 7%. I'm greater than everybody except 7% of the population. Okay.
So you're looking at, yeah. So with bone density, there's a T score and a Z score. Are you looking at T score? Which one?
My T score is minus 0.5. What is that?
So total. So T score is probably the more relevant one. That's kind of measuring, and it might say there below, that's measuring versus like a healthy younger adult. I think probably like around 30 years old. So they're kind of like benchmarking that to what a younger healthy male would have as far as bone density. So, and then it's like a standard deviation off of that. So you definitely want to be positive, essentially. And you said your score was?
I'm minus 0.5.
Okay. So yeah, I think, and then what, do you have a Z score on there? Because a Z score would be basically compared to your age.
Zero.
Okay. Interesting. So yeah, the T score, you probably, and what's the range? Do they give you like a range of average or good for that T score? Because I would think that that's probably.
My T score, let's see. So minus one and above is normal. Minus one to minus 2.5 is osteopenia. So I'm in the minus one and above. So I'm normal. My Z score of zero compares me to a person your same age. Okay. So same age. I'm greater than, let's see, minus zero. I'm between 50% and 69%. I'm greater than 50% or 69% of the population.
Yeah, I think what's relevant to pull out of this is that, like, you just don't want to be close to that osteopenia or osteoporosis, which you said it was, like, under negative one, right? Or,
So 2.5 or minus 2.5 or below, yeah.
For osteopenia or porosis?
Porosis is minus 2.5 or below. Penia is minus 1 to minus 2.5.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the range. And you know, I think it's helpful for people to understand that this is, you know, it's not just like you show up one day and you have osteoporosis. This is a spectrum, and it goes from normal bone density to osteopenia to osteoporosis. So that's, again, really the power of getting these tests, even if you get it once every two years, you'll see that, and you just don't want to be trending in that negative territory. We know that if you have more muscle mass, that's going to create better bone density. You can really get ahead of the game here if you strength train, you do resistance training. And I've actually worked with clients, and without any medication, just doing a really, you know, structured strength training protocol and eating well, you can improve your bone density, like, you know, in your 60s and 70s. Are you going to have the bone density of a 30-year-old? Probably not. But the body is incredibly resilient, and I think you can still build that density back up. But you have to address it with training and be consistent with it.
Absolutely. So let's see. What else do we got here on this thing?
Does it give you FFMI? That's another interesting one.
What's that one?
The FFMI is free fat mass index. That's kind of a fun one. So that's going to give you how much muscle mass you have on your body. You could be lean, so you could have a low body fat, but you could also be 100 and, let's say you're 6 feet tall, and, you know, you also could be 130 pounds and you're 10% body fat, but that means you have very little muscle mass.
They call it lean tissue here. This is 143. I don't have 143 pounds, so I don't have a range on that. It's my body minus my fat, essentially.
That's it. Yeah. And it includes, like, you know, muscles, bones, organs, water content. So it's basically everything less fat. This is big in a lot of the bodybuilding communities, that you'll see people have FFMI, but essentially it's just how much muscle mass you have. And you want to be, again, like per our earlier conversation around metabolic health and being a glucose sugar sink, this will give you sort of where you're at. The DEXAFIT one that I have, it's basically a score of 20. I would think you're somewhere in like the 19, 20 range, which is above average. You probably want to be over 18 on an FFMI.
Yeah. So if my body fat is 14, everything that's not body fat would be 86.
Yeah. It's based on kilograms and then your weight, your height too. So there's a calculation we'd have to.
Sorry. More complicated. Okay. To wrap up here, Nick, I mean, I tell everybody to just get a DEXA. I just think it's fantastically, I mean, it's up there with like doing blood work. Like you need to understand, if nothing else, just like your bone mass, but the visceral fat thing, you're really going to know if you do this, and you can see how much muscle you've got, which to me, That's the thing I think people miss. Like, they step on the scale. It's like, how much do I weigh? Okay, that's a somewhat interesting metric. But what you really want to know is, what's your body composition? And I think to do that accurately, I mean, there's some other ways you can, they have these like things in the gym with these electrode things. But I mean, really, the only way you're going to know is like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on board. I agree. I mean, yeah, to your point, I think we can touch on that for a second, because I think there are other ways that you can back in to body fat. There's calipers. If you've ever been to a commercial gym and you might see a personal trainer pinching somebody's back fat or belly, and that, and fairly accurate. There are these machines like InBody is a big one, or a lot of these Withings, I think Withing scale, different types of scales have ways that they calculate body fat. But all that stuff is it's basically an algorithm. It's calculated based on sort of your water weight, and it's not accurate. So the DEXA is by far the gold standard, and the fact that it gives you left arm versus right arm, trunk versus legs, visceral fat, bone density, to me, it's just a no-brainer. Because, yeah, I think it's really important to know where you stand and what those big sort of risk factors are for your health, because otherwise it's, you know, there's so much that you could be doing, and this sort of gives you a clear picture of you know, what that potential weak link could be or what your risk factors are. So yeah, I think it's a no-brainer, especially how you know, prevalent they are. There are some states, interestingly enough, where it's harder to get, like New York. I have, my family's in New York, and New York was historically difficult to get DEXAs. California has always been quite easy. Florida, Texas, quite easy. So yeah, I mean, you could Google DEXA and it'll come up in your area, but it should be, there's even mobile units that travel around I've seen before, which are kind of neat. But yeah, you get a DEXA and you get blood work, you have a pretty comprehensive picture of what's going on. Because as we talked about, like, scale weight is not very indicative of health. And even looking in the mirror, you know, there's a lot of things going on under the hood that might not be apparent to you unless you get a DEXA or get some blood work. So I agree.
Yeah. Knowledge is power. Self-knowledge is self-empowerment. And I'm a big fan. If somebody wants to get in touch with you for training, or they want to learn more about DEXAs or whatever, how do they do that?
Yeah. Nick Holt Fitness. H-O-L-T is my last name. So Nick Holt Fitness. Instagram at Nick Holt Fitness. You can Google me. I'm in Tamarindo, Costa Rica, which is a cool little surf town in the northwest corner. It's a beautiful place. It's a little hot this time of year, but that's probably the best place to find me, either Instagram or my website.
Thank you for your time today, Nick. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it, man. It was a pleasure.
Take care. Just a little follow-up on DEXA and where to get them. So I think insurance will pay for them after a certain age. I don't quite know what that is. I think it depends on insurance. I think with Medicare, it might be every year, every 2 years, and they like you to do the hospital version. It'll pay for that. The other ones, if you want to find one, I think you just Google DEXA, D-E-X-A, in wherever you are. And I really think they're worth the $75 versus the free ones you're going to get through insurance, because you get this, it's like this 8-page report about, you know, everything going on with your body. I think that's worth $75. So anyway, you can do that should you so wish. We're going to get with Just Try This after a quick word from our sponsors. Today's show is also brought to you by Inside Tracker, the dashboard to your inner health. I've been using Inside Tracker for over 3 years now. I've been able to reduce my inner age from my chronological age of 65 to an inner age now of 56. I did this gradually over time, following their recommendations. Because not only with Inside Tracker do I have a dashboard to my inner health, knowing what's going on inside me, I also have a roadmap on how to improve that. Their food first, supplement second recommendations have helped me tremendously. I recommend everyone get a dashboard to their inner health. Go to insidetracker.com/ageist. Save 20% on all their products. This week on Just Try This, I've been thinking quite a bit about this idea of virtue, to be separate from virtue signaling, which is something else, and the idea of leadership and being seen and our roles. What does that mean? My thought is, what if we all, once a day, did something that really makes us proud of who we are, and maybe other people don't notice it? that it's just something that we maybe do invisibly. We don't get credit for, it's not something we put on social media, it's not something we call and tell our friends about. It's just something that we do that makes us feel proud of who we are, that actually is virtuous. And I think that doing these sort of things, well, for one, helps us feel better about ourselves, helps us be better people, I think lowers our stress level and anxiety, and will probably lead to longer and certainly happier lives. So that's my thought on just try this week. Every day this week, maybe do something virtuous that nobody notices and you don't tell anybody about. Just try this. Oh my gosh, that was fun. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Hey, okay, this is the part of the program where you get to do something for us, which is maybe leave us a review. We would just so like that. Up to 5 stars, hopefully 5 stars. You can leave us a comment. You can share this with a friend and say, hey, you should really subscribe to this podcast. This is sort of interesting. You might like that. We would appreciate that. That's the only way we grow. If you guys have any thoughts, comments, anything you want to get off your mind, david@superage.com. I answer all of my email directly and personally. So hit me up. Happy to chat. Until next week, everybody, have a wonderful week. Try some virtue every day. See how that feels. Until then, we'll see you next week. Take care now.